time. Thank you all. Thank you, James, Lori, Jeremy, and Joe for calling in. Thank all of you for listening, and thank anybody who contributed or is going to contribute to KBOO Community Radio at KBOO.FM. Signing off, this is Paul Rowland. Thanks a lot.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 8:59 a.m. You can also hear us at K282BH Philomath at 104.3 FM and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
Take heart and take care of your link with life. It's beautiful.
Thursday, November 5th.
Welcome to Inside Washington County with Rob Solomon. We feature interviews with leaders in the community focusing on issues important to Washington County.
Today, our show was taped during the volatile COVID-19 pandemic. With our studio unavailable to us and our commitment to social distancing, we are using the Zoom platform to record today's show.
Welcome to Inside Washington County. I'm Rob Solomon. In Washington County, we have cities, towns, and a large area of unincorporated land. Cedar Mill area makes up a large portion of the unincorporated part of our county, and no one knows Cedar Mill better than today's guest, Virginia Bruce. Virginia manages the Cedar Mill Historical Society, manages CPO1 in the Community Participation Organization system, and publishes a monthly news publication, the Cedar Mill News. Virginia, could you help us get to know the Cedar Mill area? What are the geographic boundaries? How many folks live within the area? Kind of give us a flavor of Cedar Mill.
I'm not sure how many people live here. I haven't checked lately. The last figure that stuck in my head was 30,000, but I think it may be more than that. We are a census designated place. We are within the 97229 zip code, which is a huge zip code that encompasses Bethany, Rock Creek, and Cedar Mill. and it's a Portland zip code. And because it causes such confusion with people, I did an article for the Cedar Mill News called The Story of 97229. And it turns out that when zip codes were being instituted, they thought Portland would take over this area. They thought this area would be part of Portland. I even tracked down a cute editorial cartoon that showed the Beaverton residents all up in arms about trying to be taken over by Portland. So it causes no end of confusion because we have a Portland address. My friend Bruce Bartlett and I wrote a 5-part series called Urban Needs Rural Government, because I was trying to figure out what this urban unincorporated area actually was. Mm-hmm. And as it turns out, Beaverton and the other cities in Washington County weren't ready to grow back in the late 40s and 50s as Portland's housing needs expanded. And so big developers bought up large areas of land and started creating huge subdivisions. Cedar Hills is just a huge planned community type subdivision. Oak Hills is another one. And as they grew, it turned out that the systems were failing because each developer would put in their own sewers and water and powers and stuff. And so Washington County created service districts to serve this area. And so we have, where a city would have the sewer and the water and the schools and the parks, we have service districts. So we get most of the services that cities get. There are some deficiencies, shall we say. And we've been working all these many years to try to get the county to possibly create a new urban service district to help us get some of those other things. And those things include economic development. The county has never really focused on supporting economic development in the urban unincorporated areas. A greater level of planning that would benefit the residents rather than all. I've been calling, and in the early days, I used to call the Washington County Planning Department the Washington County Reacting Department, because they reacted to what developers proposed rather than having they do have plans, but they're not very granular and they're not particularly realistic.
It's long interested me as to what distinguishes the area we're talking about, Cedar Mill, from the cities within our county. And when we talk in terms of services, that's interesting. But I'd like to know what you think makes the area, Cedar Mill, special.
We have one of the longest histories of, colonial development in the county. It was a community at a very early stage in Washington County development. And the people who lived here focused on building community. There were churches, there were schools, there were the Grange. And then the Cedar Mill Library grew out of a need. And the people here got together and created that. And I think that's one of the things that does distinguish this area. I'm only one in a long line of people who saw the need for community and rolled their sleeves up and got busy creating institutions that support the community.
Isn't it kind of interesting to see that sense of community in a non-structured city?
Yeah. That underlies everything I do. I have a very strong belief that people need community. I think it's good for our mental health and our physical health, and feeling connected to a community makes life possible, I believe. It's part of what makes us human. And, and so the Cedar Mill News, the Historical Society, my involvement in the CPO, they all relate back to my deep belief that people need community. And cities often provide that. They, you know, the city of Beaverton, they have parades, they have, you know, various community building activities and institutions. When I got here, we had the library, and that was great. Some of what I do grew out of the Cedar Mill Business Association. And that group was formed actually to support the library. But when I got there, it was just a bunch of small businesses. We were sitting around at lunch one day complaining about the lack of attendance at our meetings. And I said, well, what brought each of you to the meeting today? And basically it all boiled down to gossip. And I said, well, let's start a newsletter. And I had some background in that and the skills, desktop publishing and writing and all that stuff. And so the first issue of the Cedar Mill News came out in January 2003 as a vehicle for the Cedar Mill Business Association. And it quickly grew. I really envisioned it at the beginning as a business-to-business organization, but it quickly became obvious that it was going to serve the whole community. And then it dawned on me that I could do advertising and make a little money out of it. And after a few years, it just wasn't a good fit to be under the umbrella of the business association. And I took it independent. And it's not a nonprofit, it's just an LLC.
The Cedar Mill Press, Cedar Mill News, has been going for 17 years, but it's never faced the declining role of journalism. It's never faced the COVID-19 that we're all dealing with right now. How is Cedar Mill News doing now?
Absolutely better than ever. It's amazing. I picked up my CSA box yesterday, and the lady that has the distribution point thanked me for my work. And I said, I'm lucky enough to be in a position to use my skills and my personality traits in a way that serves my community. I was telling somebody the other day, I used to stay up late and eavesdrop on my parents just to know what they were doing. So I want to know what's going on. And I love to gossip and share that information.
It enables your newspaper to be a community service as well as a community builder.
That's right. And even before all of this, we had been from the beginning, the Cedar Mill News has been both printed and online. My background was in website development, so that was a natural. As the web developed, my skills kind of got less and less up to date. And so I knew that we needed to have a content management system. And so we just in, believe it or not, March, launched our brand new website on the WordPress platform. And the goal there, I've got a phrase I call community source journalism, which is, I can't possibly write it all myself. And I rely on other people to give me tips and even to write the articles. And so by having it in WordPress, that's gonna make that much more easy. There are lots of reasons to have WordPress. And so I did a fundraiser a year ago last spring and raised enough money to be able to hire a WordPress developer, because I just kept finding that I didn't have the time to back off and work on that. And so we got that site up and running. I mean, we're constantly fixing it. There's you know, it's never going to be done. It's like a lot of other projects. I got involved in the internet pretty early. I did my first website in 1994, and I knew, my horrible pun, you'll appreciate this, Rob, love at first sight. So I knew it was going to change the world.
I believe that you not only are involved with the Cedar Mill Historical Society, but that you started the society.
Yeah.
What's the goal of the organization, and how do they try and meet it? In other words, what sort of programs does the Historical Society run?
Well, that's a little bit problematic. We, yes, I started learning about Cedar Mill history a few years after I moved to the area. I met the woman that wrote, one of the women that wrote the history book, and I'd always been interested in pioneers. My grandmother was a pioneer in Kansas, and so I'd always been interested in that. And as I learned more about our pioneers and what a large role they played in the development of Washington County, I just got fascinated with it and tried to learn more and more. And I happened to be lucky enough to have an office in the old Milltowner building, which is now demolished and undergoing reconstruction. And I worked with a man named David Lewis, who is a Native American with a PhD in cultural anthropology. And he studies the Indians of this region, trying to bring back the language and the culture, because it was all so dispersed during the whole reservation process and all of that. The culture was just almost, you can imagine, you know, sand covering the history of the culture. But that's his mission. And I was interested because we have the Kalapuya, the Atfalati tribes of the Kalapuya band who lived here. And David knows about that. And so when I was forming the Historical Society and trying to figure out how to further the mission of learning about our culture and our history, he said, just put on an exhibition. Just get people in here to see what you've got. And I was fortunate enough to have a very large office space in that building, which was about to be demolished, that I could use to set up a museum. And I had my own history museum, and it was pretty darn nice. We had panels, we've got tons of photos, we've got stories. But of course, when the building became demolished, we had to move it all away.
Well, if I may, I had an opportunity to visit that Historical Society in your office. It was fascinating, some of the material that you found. Now it leads me to perhaps the most important question of the day. If that building's been demolished and that office is no longer there, what's happened to the Historical Society?
Well, we formed the 501c3 in 2016. I've kind of got the philosophy of, you know, when you've got a good idea, run with it and see where it goes. I'm not a chess player, so I don't really plot out my moves very far in advance. And it's not necessarily good, but it means that you get stuff done and then you kind of figure out how to pull the pieces together after you start. Mm-hmm. We have a board, of course. Our original board, I call it, you know, warm bodies that you could assemble to go ahead and get the IRS 501c3. And except with one exception, we don't have our original board members. I've always stayed off the board because I have this secret notion that maybe it'll get big enough to provide me an income as an executive director. But in any case, now the secret's out. In any case, The board members have kind of come and gone. The John Quincy Adams Young House was saved from either moving or demolition by some people, but especially Sue Conger, who I kind of consider my predecessor in the preservation of Cedar Mill history. The Park District bought it from the Bible Church, and we formed an ad hoc committee to try to plan out what to do with it. But the park district's mission, or their notion, was to have the community pay for anything that needed to be done to the house. And that was, that's always been a large barrier, because we're a very small 501c3. And how do we raise $1 million to renovate this house? A little over a year ago, the district contacted us and said, if you raise the money, we will let you use the house as your history museum and your office. And that was very important, because, you know, just raising money to renovate a house is not as exciting as raising the money for us to use the house and to provide it as the history museum for the community. Now, the house was built in somewhere in the 1860s. It was built from 2x12 vertical cedar timbers. So it's pretty stable. And that's why it's one of the oldest houses in Washington County. And so, but the foundation of the house, we believe that it probably was started with a little cabin that was established for the mill. And then when JQA took it over, he built the house. So the foundation is a hodgepodge of the original cabin's basement, probably, and then additions added since then. The drainage is terrible. And so we're still at this point trying to figure out if we need to move the house or just raise it and build a new foundation. We have some new board members and an advisory guy who really know about this stuff. And so they've been working with the Park District to come up with a memorandum of understanding with the district to figure out what, you know, how we're going to work on this. And we're just finalizing the details of a request for proposals to begin that process. We have to figure out what needs to be done to the house and how much it's going to cost. And that's the first step in the memorandum of understanding. And when we get to that step, then we can start raising money and figuring out how to get the work done. So I do things like make sure that our IRS status stays valid and fielding requests from the public and information. Somebody just recently asked if we'd like an antique bed that they have that they want to donate. So, you know, I get all sorts of requests and interest from the public. So those are sort of my roles.
Gotcha. You know, cities have mayors and councils, of course, you know, and are also governed by the county. Cedar Mill is governed only by the county. That's is there any difference, as you see it, between the relationship county government has with its cities and the relationship county government has with the unincorporated areas of our county, especially Cedar Mill?
A lot of that is covered in that series of articles, and I've got a new volunteer who's going to update that report, because it was written in 2008-2009, Urban Needs Rural Government. The county's government is a lot less rural than it was in those days. When I first started the paper, I kept hearing, the county's not in the business of providing urban services. They don't say that anymore, because their expectation was that the city would annex Cedar Mill, that Beaverton would annex Cedar Mill, Hillsborough would annex Bethany, and so on and so forth. And those cities really haven't shown the appetite for that. Yeah, during Rob Drake's days, they annexed all of the money-making parts, the roads and the and some of the downtown, but they don't want to annex the residential areas because they lack sidewalks and they lack a lot of the other amenities that a city would normally provide. And the taxes that people would pay, you know, would not cover all that, and it'd be a drain. Plus, the residents would have to vote in favor of the annexation. And most people don't really see an advantage into becoming part of a city when they'd have to pay higher property taxes.
I understand, unless, of course, they were going to get value for their money, such as sidewalks and the urban services that we're talking about.
Right, but those are subtle things that it's going to be hard to make a case for. Things like urban, economic development, sidewalks, so on and so forth. The county's been providing sidewalks as development occurs, and when there's, you know, a real need for it. So, like I said, they have been stepping up to provide better urban services. When Andrew Singelakis was hired as the head of land use and transportation, we all cheered loudly because he had an urban background. And he definitely he moved on, and the new director was part of that staff, and he also understands the need for that's land use and transportation in the county. He understands the need to serve our urban unincorporated areas. Just a side note, they say that if all of Washington County's urban unincorporated areas were one city, it would either be the second or third largest city in Oregon.
Some 600,000 or so, as far as I know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So moving away from the Cedar Mill government stuff and into a different aspect of government, you are involved in the CPO system, the Citizen Participation Organization. And I believe the whole CPO system was redone just a year or two ago. How is that working? How's the representation going? Do you feel it's a valid system involving civic engagement?
I first encountered the CPO even before I started the paper. My mother had been involved in land use issues in Saratoga, California, in the Bay Area. So I kind of grew up with the notion that people can make a difference, and that people should have a voice in how land gets used. Mm-hmm. I discovered the CPO and I go, oh my goodness, this is great. And so I started going to meetings and met Bruce Bartlett, who's become like my best friend. We're, they call us the Bruce twins, Bruce Bartlett and Virginia Bruce.
Mm-hmm.
Oregon's land use laws went into effect in the 80s, and goal one was citizen involvement in land use issues. Each county was told to develop their own system, and in many counties, it's the planning department, the volunteer planning department.
Yeah.
Washington County decided, and I, you know, love to write more about this, but they decided to create the CPO system. And at that point, it was called Citizen Participation Organization. And it was administered by OSU Extension about, I think it may have been 10 years ago or 7 or 8 years ago, they decided that it just wasn't part of their core mission. There were some questions about liability in terms of meeting the content of the meetings, and you know, people it was very confusing, and so they expressed their interest in getting out of that business. And there was this transition process, which I have very mixed feelings about it, but I always felt the fix was in and it would become part of the county, and I was right. We really lobbied hard to get Portland State Urban Studies to manage it, but that never got enough traction. And I was concerned that the county would try to manage the discussions that we had. When Andy Dyke was chair of the Washington County Commission, his opinion was that the CPO system should exist to get the county's message out to the people, period. And that is not our mission. Our mission is to get information out to the people and to get the people's opinion back to the county. Yeah, and that was the thing that I was really afraid of, was that they were going to be censoring us and overmanaging us. And it's been a struggle. It's not as evil as I was afraid it was going to be, but it's been a struggle. And we're currently in, we're just about to approve a subcommittee of CCI. CCI is the Committee for Community Involvement, which is the leadership group of all the CPOs in the county. And we're just about to form an ad hoc subcommittee on communications, because we have real issues with the way the county provides information. Their IT department, like most IT departments, is not interested in making sure that everybody can access the information, but in making it as efficient as possible for the IT department. And so currently, for example, I use a Mac. I can only use one browser to access the maps on the county website. It's built for people with PCs. And that's an equity issue. And the county's been talking a lot about equity. And we have been putting together a big long list of issues where the county and improve their communications so that we can provide information to the public. I mean, we should not have to be IT experts to pull information off the county website to share it with our constituents.
Thank you so much for taking so much of your time today and sharing it with us to help us understand the role of an activist and to help us understand Cedar Mill much better. Thank you very much.